Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wake up in the morning feeling like
Waterman is extremely well. She's very slippery.
You don't own me.
Okay, now the tough question.
Is this a try? Yes or no?
Just because I'm a woman.
Hello, Try Hards podcaster friends.
2021 has started with an even worse intro.
I don't know where I was going with it. I started saying Try Hards podcast, and then I was like, I don't know what I didn't want to say hello friends. But then, you know, really, hello friends.
How's things?
Yeah, not too bad. I've just done my morning walk and I've clocked 3.33 exactly, weird, miles for Doddy. For hashtag Team South.
How are you? I didn't know that you were involved. Why are you Team South?
I didn't know that you could pick your team. And really, I should probably be Team Exiles. But I basically, Rory Lawson is Team South captain. Obviously, Rory's one of my close friends and was like, you go on, you pick Team South. And I just followed his instructions. I didn't realise I could have not picked Team South. But I'm Team South, so I've done 13.33 miles total this week. Wow. I missed the day yesterday. I did 5 miles Monday and Tuesday, 3.33 today. I might try and get another walk in later. But yeah, we're doing it for Doddy.
That's nice. No, Johnny Beattie messaged me and was like, do you want to be part of it? And I was like, hell yeah, of course. What do I do?
Team Exiles then.
Yeah, and it was actually...
I thought you would have gone with where your auntie lives.
Don't actually know really roughly geography-wise where that is. And also, Johnny Booty was lovely and messaged me and asked me to be involved. So, yeah, I haven't officially clocked anything yet, but I am all ready to go and went on a little 5K... Well, 5.5K today I managed, actually. Actually leads on to a thought that we've had about the new year. Well, it's obviously been a bit rubbishy. New lockdown in England. Wales have been locked down for 533 years. And just everything. And we were chatting off the pod and we talked about bringing some positivity, weren't we?
Yeah, we want to have a pause for positivity at the beginning of the podcast for the next few weeks. And in fact, it's something that we'd love you to join in with a little bit as well and maybe send us on social media what your positive in your life is. And it can be something that you've done. It can be something you've experienced. It can be a really small win. I'm going to tell you what mine is. You tell me yours first.
Because mine was quite small, but on the run this morning, one, it was 5.5K, which is further than I've done for a decent amount of time.
That's amazing.
But the positivity came from the fact that I managed to finally find my mum's headband, which is actually from the 80s. And she used to run half marathons. Mum was a little ledge, the old dashing. Obviously, last October, completed the London Marathon. So I channeled my inner Suba and got on her headband and I felt really positive and good vibes.
I love that. And I think you're gonna have to put a picture on social media just so we look
good, headband look good, feel good.
Absolutely look good, play good, look good, run further than you have done for ages. My positivity in my life this week is that my mum is now doing all my washing for me.
What?
So, as you well know, I live in a small one-bedroom flat. I don't have any windows in my flat.
You do have windows.
Well, I do have windows, but basically I've got one big patio door, so it's all or nothing. I can't just have like a little bit of air, which means it's really difficult to dry clothes. And my mum's taken pity on me and has now just said that she'll do all of my washing for me. And I know it sounds like what a lazy thing to do as an adult, you know, you're hardly working, all this kind of thing. But it's something that really stresses me out because I can't dry my clothes. It makes my flat damp. It means that things like a pair of jeans take about 2 weeks to dry in the conditions of my flat.
Why would you need to wash jeans at the moment? Don't make out you've worn jeans recently.
You know what? I'm trying to think when the last time I did wear jeans, but I am going to wear jeans tomorrow for work because I've got clean jeans to wear. So, you know, it's mainly a lot of leisure wear that she's washing, but regardless, this is the most positive thing to happen to me
inspired by both of our mums, so there you go.
Yeah, yes, well done Suba and Karen Jones, you are the heroes of this week's pod. We've discussed outside of the podcast, we are going to bring you our try hard tip of the week as well. So Nolly, do you want to lead on this?
Yeah, well, one thing that I learned from Giselle a little while ago was, we're talking about just to-do list. I love writing a to-do list. I'm not very good at completing the to-do list, and I do have things that potentially were on my to-do list for all of lockdown. Anyway, we were chatting.
Tell you what isn't on that list, cleaning out that cupboard behind you.
No, it's a mess again, so it needs to be, it's gone back onto the list. Anyway, so Giselle was talking about how she got rid of frogs on her to-do list, and I was like, what are you on about, Giselle? And she's like, she's talking about reading it from a book, I don't know. Anyway, she basically said frogs on your to-do list are the things that jump from to-do list to to-do list to to-do list. Now, I love a visualization and it does make sense to me now, so my tip of the week is to basically squish your frogs every Friday to make sure that by Monday, you get rid of the frogs so they don't leap into Friday, whichever way round you want to do it. Because if you squish a frog, it's amazing how much more energy you actually get. It's like I finally paint my toenails, I'm then flying and I basically tidy the whole house. I do all sorts of things.
You know what, as well, that's a really interesting like analogy, because I have this a lot where something as simple as like painting your toenails makes you feel like an organized person, like you've got your life together so you can like tackle anything. I completely get that.
We do have quite a few male listeners, so if you want to paint your toenails, I know a number of the male rugby players used to. Actually, James Haskell, I think, has put it out there because it stops getting the black nails, which is awful. Might also feel a little bit more, fresh, a little bit more colourful. David Flatland regularly gets his daughters to paint his nails. So, yeah. You know, bit of lockdown entertainment for your children, bit of colour for you, and who knows?
I like that.
May get some more stuff done.
That's my tip. My tip is going to be, do you know what, this isn't like a tip for like living life, but it's just a tip of something that like I've done this week, which was something that was handed to me by another friend, and it's a baton I like to hand on. Is at the moment I live alone, I'm sure there are other people who listen to the pod who live alone. There's nothing more soul destroying than cooking meals for one, so it's quite nice to make things that you know you can get a few meals out of. So on Monday I made a joint of gammon and I did cola ham. So my friend Luke Rosier, who's a former colleague of mine at Sky Sports, used to sing, "It's just another hammy Monday." And he used to make this every Monday. So we didn't work Mondays in production and he lived in a house full of boys. So he would make them ham every Monday. And it's basically a joint of ham in a saucepan with a red onion quartered, a couple of carrots, a couple of sticks of celery and a bottle of Coke and like Coca-Cola. And bring it to the boil and then cook it for about 45 minutes for every 750 grams of ham. And then once it's simmered, the appropriate amount of time, take it out, glaze it with black treacle and French grain mustard, and put it in the oven for 15 minutes. And it is just the juiciest meat imaginable. And I did it on Monday, and I obviously had the kind of, it took me back to, you know, times when I was younger and I used to cook that on a day off, and it was just so nice. And then I had the leftovers in sandwiches on Tuesday, and it was just a really, again, cooking gives me a bit of a feeling of purpose in times where it's really easy to, especially when you live alone, to buy ready meals or to eat a lot of crudité. There'll be a lot of other people who eat bags of carrot batons and hummus for their dinner when you live alone.
And going through the Christmas cheese board that
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's just something for me, doing something like that made me feel like it was a good, on a Monday at least, to make a meal from scratch was something that made me feel kind of normal and happy about the week. So my tip is making cola ham, because it'll just bring so much happiness to your life.
And when you say cola, I mean, is it a bottle of Coke, actual official Coke, or is
I used Morrison's own cola.
Oh.
I felt like the cheaper the cola, the better. So like, it wasn't Coke, it was cola.
Oh, right.
You can't use Coke Zero, you can't use Diet Coke. It was just so good, and I had it with roasted root vegetables, roast potatoes. It would have been nice with the parsley sauce, but I made a kind of jus from my black treacle and cola. But it was just delicious. It was so nice. Yeah.
So there you go, listeners. We have our very own Tryhards Delia, and two top tips and some positivity. Flying.
Talking of positivity, I went into Wales camp on Sunday.
I saw you caught up with the gang.
How good do those pictures look as well? My cameraman Matt Cahill is just the best of the best. And
I've worked with Matt. He's a good guy.
He is the nicest man in the world. I love him to bits. I've known him a long time. We've been on some adventures. He actually filmed the world record attempts that I did in Toulon. So we've been on some good trips and had a lot of fun over the years. But he's also just a very, very talented man and took some amazing pictures.
Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Talk about world records.
Yeah.
When we were little, one of the best presents that we ever got, my mum bought my oldest brother, Sam, the book of Guinness World Records or whatever. And we were obsessed with it. We were absolutely obsessed with it. And I remember being absolutely obsessed with the picture of the person with the world's longest fingernails. And it was absolutely,
Did you used to watch Record Breakers though? With Cheryl Baker and Chris Akabusi.
Yes. And we used to always come up with versions of like what we could do. But the fingernails, I don't know whether it's been broken. I actually walked past Waterstones the other day. Broken it was in the window. The person was stood upstairs and they were like hanging over the balcony. They were that long. And me and my brothers were always like, but how do they walk? Like obviously like with them dragging behind them, do they hold their hands in the air? Like, what do they do?
Don't they, as they grow? Like,
no, they, like, oh.
Oh, no, the woman who was on the programme, hers were, like twisted as they grew. And she, there was, a clip in the rushes where she was cutting her grandson's hair. And I was like, but not how do you eat, how do you wipe your bum? No, and because obviously I have my hand in a plaster cast at Christmas, I've come to a whole new understanding of, like, how. And so I'll tell you this, because my dad doesn't listen to the podcast.
Why are you leaning closer to the screen? It's not a secret when it's on a podcast.
Like a mile away. So when I hurt my hand and it was in the plaster, and I basically, sorry to any listeners here if this is too graphic for you, the straw that broke the camel's back before I went to hospital was that you do everything right-handed, and it was very painful to do some basic, you know, kind of ablution tasks right-handed.
Putting your hair up.
Brushing
your teeth.
Basically, I told my dad this after my hand was in plaster, and I was like, how am I going to wipe my bum? Like, my right hand is in plaster. And my dad is actually going in next Thursday to have his thumb fused. He's already had his left hand fused, now he's having his right hand fused. And he revealed to my mum and I that he's been practicing wiping his bum with his left hand in preparation. And that's probably quite an obvious thing to do if you know that you're going to be without the use of it. But I just thought it was the weirdest thing in the world. Like, you know, I haven't witnessed him practicing eating with his left hand or doing anything else, but turned around and said, yeah, I've been practicing. And I just thought, but just the typical thing that a man would think of. So I'm sorry to anyone who listens.
A man from the military, I think.
A man from the military, yeah. If you know NJJ, please don't tell him that I brought that up because he'd be really angry. But yeah, we've deviated from the point. That I was
the Guinness World Record book or whatever. I can't, what's the name of the book?
The Guinness Book of World Records.
That's it.
Which isn't affiliated with Guinness.
And Record Breaker.
It
was such a lovely flashback. Not the nails, but just how much we were obsessed with reading it. And actually, tell you a little story. I was part of a world record down on Western Supermare Beach. I was part of Sporting Champions. Who was I with? A GB volleyball player. Oh my god, I'm really sorry. I'm sure you don't listen to the pod. Well, probably does, but I can't remember. Oh my god, it will come back to me, her name. And we did the most amount of sandcastles built on a beach in half an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was part of that. We had a whole load of school kids down there. It was amazing. I obviously got mega, mega competitive in my own zone. And I know, it was quite surprising actually. I was supposed to be there to encourage the kids, obviously.
Get out of the way!
Took it to heart that I obviously needed to concentrate.
This sand isn't wet enough!
anyway, there you go.
At home and you're homeschooling, you would do worse than buy the Guinness Book of World Records for them to flick through, because obviously you have world records in there, like, you know, the fastest 100 meters run and the longest fingernails, but there are things that you can get them attempting. So when we did the Guinness World Records attempts, one of them was to crush the most apples with your bicep in 30 seconds. Now, no kid is going to be able to do that. It's really hard. Or the other one that
we have quite a lot of older male listeners in there, like 30 to 40, looking at our demographic. No pressure. Be a try-hard.
Yeah, the record is 19, so there you go. So that's something perhaps to look at. And do you know what's really weird? We're talking about this. One of the ones that we tried was the most pairs of socks paired in 30 seconds. And I'm wearing a pair of the socks.
That's amazing. That's really good. I think I might be...
He didn't get anywhere close to it.
I might be good at it only because of my dodgy thumbs. I've got a lot of movement, so therefore,
whip them in. It's not that. It's your brain. So you have to have them as a jumbled pile, and you they have to be pairs. So you have to find two socks and ball them, and your brain. You just stand there shaking. The other one was the most socks on one foot, and I think he got like 10, and the record was like 40. But you can imagine how big your leg ends up being when you've got that many socks on one foot. And it was one of these things we flew out there to do it. I had to bring two adjudicators from Guinness World Records. I had my friend and colleague Josh shooting it. Matt Cahill was the cameraman, as I've mentioned. So we spent thousands on this. And the first record he attempted was the most Jaffa cakes eaten in
Who was it?
Drew Mitchell, and he ate two Jaffa cakes in a minute. I can't remember what the length of time was, but he was like 40 short of the record. And by the time we got to the third record, I had sweat like dripping down my back because I was thinking, we spent all this money and he's not even close to any of these records. Like, it was ridiculous. And then he tried the most apples crushed with the bicep, which he managed to do. He and Matt Gitter.
We got a record in that.
Oh yeah, he's got four. So he did the most knuckle press ups, which we allowed the legend Bobby Paul Strigeon to come and help him with, and we had to cut most of the audio out because Bobby just stood there swearing at him, telling him how rubbish he was. They did the most passes of a rugby ball between a pair. They broke that record, Matt Gitto.
Oh my gosh, I've just realised, what was the Sky Sports Kids show that
Game Changers?
So I'm going to just digress only because they attempted that when I went on there, and I was on there with Maggie and Heather, and I was a Sky Sports athlete mentor. So worked in schools and engaging with disengaged kids and like, or just sporty group. Like, it was absolutely brilliant. I love it. I'm still part of the Youth Sport Trust, as you know, but it meant that we've got to go on Game Changers, and we did this like little coaching clinic, and then we went into the studio, and honest to God, my absolute goal as a kid was to be on a Saturday morning show. So I became obsessed with being on the show, but I was obviously the athlete mentor and kind of helping to host, but it was like I was far more excited than all of the kids. If the camera had followed me around, it would have been
growing up watching Live and Kicking.
Yeah, it would have been and Funhouse, whole lot of fun.
That wasn't on a Saturday morning. That was on a weekday afternoon.
Oh, was it? Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, loved it. And yeah, no, I think it was actually, wasn't it? Live and Kicking was good. But they decided to try and attempt the Guinness World Record of best passes in a minute. They have an international fullback sat there, and they decided to use Maggie and Heather, two back rowers.
Maggie was famed for passing.
It was honestly one of the funniest things, because I sat there watching as they passed the ball. Heather was okay at passing, but they were passing it so hard to each other because they've always competed against each other as two back rowers. At one point, there was this display with all of the gifts that people have brought in to the show, and the ball was launched so far.
Oh,
it smashed everything. It was just absolutely ridiculous. They got nowhere close to it, and it was a bit embarrassing because it was live TV. Anyway,
well, the boys broke it. So Drew and Matt.
No, I'm not surprised.
And broke it. Yeah, but the worst thing was, so they broke it, and they were like, "Yeah, we've done it!" And they'd just before the 2015 World Cup, two English like teenage boys, like late teens, early 20s, had got the record. So Matt and Drew were like, "Yeah, we've taken it off the English." And then this isn't funny, but I know this guy is on the mend now. After it was released that they'd broken the record, the guy who had held the record previous to them messaged Drew and was like, "Hi Drew, hope you're well. Well done on taking our record. Just to let you know, I've broken my neck playing rugby." Was like, I had never felt that guilty in his life. Like, they'd given it the big one that they'd taken these two young boys' record. The guy's okay now and actually did really well through his rehab, and said to Drew, "Oh, you know, why don't you and I try it, and you know, we can take the record together and take it off the other two boys, you know." But imagine the guilt that you would feel. We've taken your record. I've actually broken my neck.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Awesome.
Anyway, should we go back to you going to Wales camp?
Yeah. So I went to Wales camp, and I have to say, literally a year ago. So I went in when Chris Horsman was in charge a year ago, before the Six Nations, when Wales played Ireland in a behind closed doors, little friendly hit out.
Did the doors get opened? And la 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 la.
The doors, yeah.
Were they open towards you? Were they slide? Open outwards?
Doors give you more space. Pocket doors. I've watched a lot of home improvement shows during lockdown. So went in last year, and I, you know, not to besmirch or badmouth anyone, but I kind of felt that there was something lacking in Wales camp in terms of women being coached by people who understood the women's game. And Warren Abrams has been brought in and is the most positive man I've ever met. He's come from a short spell with USA Rugby Sevens, working with Chris Brown, and who is a great guy. You and I both have a huge amount of respect from him, from the Seven series. Warren is so positive, and like, you know, I had to say to him, "Look, I have hurt my hand.
Can you just chill out a little bit, please?"
Well, yeah, I was like, "All right, I'm meant to be the energy." But I just, you know, it got to the point in the interview where I was so kind of buzzing for Wales women at the World Cup that I had to say to him, "Look, my hand's not in great shakes. I'm not going to make the Six Nations, but I could have a run for the World Cup." I felt that inspired by it. So that was a really nice positive. But I think, for me, the far more interesting conversation I had that day is I spoke to all three of the coaches, and I've definitely talked about it on the pod before, that I really haven't been able to understand.
I'm sorry.
Me playing rugby. You do this every week.
I had a flashback to you telling me that you wanted to play 10 in a testimonial game with me, and what that would look like in my head still is there as one of the funniest images of rugby, and it hasn't even happened. It will happen.
It will happen at a World Cup. Anyway, Snowy, don't panic, but you know, maybe a little bit. I spoke to Rachel Taylor as well, and I've spoken on the pod a lot about the fact that I haven't been able to understand why she wasn't involved in that setup. But having spoken to her on Sunday, and this will all be on Scrum 5 this coming weekend.
Oops, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Was that, she, you know, like she said, she's been given the opportunity to go away from a setup that she played in and learn more about the game, learn from coaching men, coaching age grade, coaching club rugby in Wales with Gogledd Cymru, that means North Wales. And it really made me realise that actually the path that she's taken here and this expansion of knowledge and experience is going to stand Wales women so much better in the long run. So I'm so pleased to see her involved. And then Sophie Spence, the Geordie Irish girl, threw me because I've never heard Sophie Spence speak. So I've obviously covered lots of Ireland women's games over the years, and I'm so used to seeing her in green with her head taped. And then she sat down and she talks like this, but in a Geordie accent.
What's that?
Yeah, I tried. I really tried. She said that she's found Warren's philosophy for the game just so laced in positivity that she wanted to put her boots back on. And it was just great to talk to the two of them as well about the
slightly awkward because she's coaching Wales, so she...
I know, I was like, yeah, all right.
You know what, I think
dash, actually, but like, don't get too keen.
I think to be fair, I think you cover a few good points there. About, I actually watched a video from Jamie Carragher.
Carragher.
That's the only reason I remembered his name, because his Twitter handle was at C-A-R-R-A. Anyway, he was talking about, not rugby, but football, and Frank Lampard and coaches like Michael Owen and stuff going in and being football managers right to the top straight away. And that actually, as much as they've got there because of their name, it's not because of their experience, and coaching isn't like that. And, you know, as somebody that has stepped into coaching and done it for a significant part of my career, I remember my first few months, or first year really, at Hartbury when I went in 2010, we lost the World Cup. I actually remember when we lost the World Cup final, I walked over towards the tunnel because my parents were sat above it, and I was like looking, and I was trying to get my dad to come down. Obviously Super was there straight away. And I was like waiting, and everyone was like, and Siobhan Longdon Hughes, who was one of the girls that was coming, and Hartbury was like, Nolly, I'll see you next week, I'm coming to Hartbury. And I was like, I don't want to go to work. God. Anyway, Siobhan's a brilliant girl. I remembered starting at Hartbury at the first year being like, what is this coaching malarkey? Like, I'd done loads of teaching, I'd done bits and pieces, and I'd coached, but I hadn't run a whole program. I hadn't headed up something. And, you know, I was working with under 18s and at the same time, it was just this baptism of fire, like, oh my gosh. And what I did in my first year compared to my fourth year was like totally different, you know? And actually then what I took from that learning into the Wasps Academy, and this is all at under 18 levels, this is academy stuff, to then go into a senior role with the Italian guys and the Cavaliers. And actually, the one thing that I was taught when I was at Hartbury was to not take a position until I really felt like, not that I was ready, because I think a lot of coaching comes, you kind of, with every job, you know, there's always that imposter syndrome, isn't there? There's always like, I'm not ready, you know, and you never can be ready to the point where you know, absolutely flying. But if you take one of those top jobs, you are there to be shot down, and it's a lot quicker down because there's not anywhere further to go, really. And I can, like, it's brilliant that Tails has done that in terms of going and getting experience away from her environment, because she was a fantastic rugby player, and is a fantastic coach, but she will have got so much from it to learn away from that international role. Yeah. And then I suppose to build on that with Sophie Spence, in that intern role, and Amy Turner, who is the intern with England Rugby, going into the Women's World Cup. For those that don't know, World Rugby have placed a position and given them accreditation and support financially, one intern for every nation that's at the World Cup. And I think it's absolutely brilliant idea. I think it's promoting female coaches. It's giving them exposure at the top level. But fundamentally, it's providing experience in a nurtured way, in a way to develop. And I hope, I hope that all of the nations take it seriously and provide that experience and really support those younger, like not younger in age, but younger in experience coaches. Because, you know, for me, Amy Turner was the perfect choice for that role. She's an awesome coach. Will actually do a hell of a lot if she's given the opportunity with England, especially in the back. And it was really cool to see her pitch side running water, doing all those duties, because she's learning about it before being in the limelight and being criticised and being shot down. And yeah, I think it's good. It's cool to see Sophie Spence in that role as well.
Yeah, and for people who kind of don't understand why Sophie Spence, as a former Irish international, is with Wales, she is on a WRU player coaching pathway. She's been a part of that for, I think, the past 18 months.
She lives in Wales, doesn't she? She's got a coffee shop.
Yeah, she lives in Swansea. She's got a coffee shop down there, and she coaches, I think, at Penclouth. But she's on the WRU player coach pathway, which people like Reese Webber are also on. So that's why she's got that affiliation. So it's fit really well. And obviously for her at the moment, like, she's, the cafe's shut because of lockdown. So she's able to throw everything into coaching. And yeah, she was really excitable. And one thing I think for Wales fans that I kind of like took from it, and something to get Wales fans excited, you know, in terms of what global sporting events we have this year, for me, looking at the calendar, and I mean, outside of rugby, across all sports, the Women's World Cup is something that we can be hopeful of taking place because of the stringent measures New Zealand have taken and because of where it's
the one place in the world that you'd want a tournament to be going ahead is New Zealand.
There's cricket down there as well this year, isn't there? So I'd be really hopeful of it going ahead. And for a number of reasons, I think Wales fans need to get excited, get behind the girls and really start showing an interest in this. One of them is that the opening match of this tournament could be New Zealand Wales at Eden Park. And you know, the girls are fizzing with excitement when you talk about it with them, and that's a really exciting prospect. That's huge. The other thing is that
maybe not so much at half time when they've been batted for 40 minutes.
They could be rusty, they've got all the pressure. That's the vibe I'm going for. But one thing that we've talked about before that is going to have a huge impact, and this is something I talked to Tails about, is that this quarterfinal level that is being put into the Women's World Cup, it's countries like Wales where that's going to have a big impact, because it's going to be knockout rugby, and it's, you know, they have got an absolutely horrendous group to get out of, but equally there are more places to get out of the group and get into. There's only three pools and then there's eight slots to be filled beyond that. So I do think that Wales fans, it's time to really get behind Wales women this year. This is it.
And you know what? The quarterfinals is brilliant, because I actually think there's going to be some upsets. I think what happens is you don't see the upsets normally in the Women's World Cup, because you go straight to semis and then, like, you know, it's semi-final, final. So you're pretty much towards the end of the, I think that is going to be, it's going to be fun to see, actually. And they're actually far more nerve-wracking for the players than... So I remember the semi-finals for me. World Cup semi-finals were the worst games I ever played.
Really?
Because they were the point where you lost the opportunity to become a world champion or not. And there was nothing... If you didn't win that game, there was nothing you could do to get a gold medal. Like, So I was always the most nervous and... You know, semi-final in 2014, played Ireland. Ireland had beaten New Zealand. They were the talk of the tournament. And we actually ended up putting together probably our best performance of the tournament, and probably one of the best performances England have seen as a collective squad. Because we were all really nervous before that. And then the semi-final in 2017 against France. Again, France were the talk of the tournament. I only lasted 25 minutes before I went off with my HIA, but it was probably the hardest 25 minutes of my career. Yeah. And the girls said that was probably the hardest 80 minutes they've ever played.
Yeah.
Because it's the pressure of the knockout nature of that game. And I think maybe...
When you get to a final, that anything's possible as well. Whereas at a semi-final, is it more pressure when it gets to a final? Is it not a what will be, but we've got to the final, we can be world champions? Whereas that you've got more.
Well, you've got the shot at it, haven't you?
Yeah.
yeah, you've got the shot at it. If you don't win the semi-final, you haven't even got a shot.
No.
Like, there's nothing you can do. Whereas at least if you're in the game, there's something you could do. You've got 80 minutes ahead of you to do something about winning. Yeah, and I think the thing for me, I got asked the other day, you know, how will England get on? Will they win it? And look, I think, and it probably leads on quite nicely to the club rugby stuff at the moment, but New Zealand are ahead of the game because they're New Zealand, they're at home, but also the amount of rugby that they've been able to play all the way through because of, you know, the restrictions that they haven't had on them. And it's also meant that loads of their seven stars have been able to have a significant proportion of time in the 15s game, which they wouldn't have normally had in the build-up. So it's good practice for them, obviously, not ideal for everyone else. And then the other side of it is that England have got good depth. So the depth for England, I think, will stand them in good stead more so possibly than France, although we saw a lot more players playing through the autumns with France because they are trying to build that depth. Because and that's where the difference between someone like Wales and England and France, you know, the top teams and the, you know, you've got this kind of core group at the top and then below, is that actually with England, they can put out anyone within their World Cup squad to start a game and be in contention to win that game. You know, whereas Wales will have a very clear starting squad, maybe 18, 19 players that they can select from rather than the 28. And so I think that that's where you'll see a difference in the nature. But that said, anything like I think the quarterfinals make it exciting, and how that tiers out because it comes from three pools, which is a strange one.
I have got a question for you. I had a conversation, I won't say who with, earlier this week about the nature of this year's sporting calendar. And there is still great doubt over the Olympics and if it goes this summer, because, you know, the way that swimming and athletics and stuff like that works, they can't delay it another year. It will just go on to Paris. There'll be no Tokyo Olympics. In a rugby sense, in terms of sevens players then being available for 15s, I know that there are a number of players who intend to try and do both anyway, but if they don't have the Olympics to concentrate on, which country will benefit the most, do you think, from a pool of sevens players who then become available to the 15s programme?
I think New Zealand. I think as soon as it's cancelled, I think New Zealand, the girls will just jump straight across. And it's, I think, England and Team GB, they've been playing in Premier 15s, you know, all of the girls have been involved in 15s. But I think the fact that as soon as that announcement happens, they are world-class rugby players that are going to be in there. I think another team that will benefit is Australia. A lot of the girls would be really interested to see where the sevens girls go, because we saw the likes of Charlotte Caslick, world-class rugby player, going into the rugby league, and actually
Ivania Polite.
Ivania, that's it, sorry. You know, absolutely carving up, Elia Green carving up in rugby league. Do they then say, actually, you know what, let's give a crack at 15s? And with them in a 15s game, it's going to be very different again. So I think maybe, yeah, probably New Zealand, Australia would benefit because of the world-class players they've got in their sevens programme.
Two teams in Wales's group, so not the answer I was.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Anyway,
we move on to club rugby.
Yeah, well, that's probably like quite a that's a big thing for England and Wales and any and Ireland as well. You know, obviously they haven't qualified yet, but the fact that Premier 15s is going ahead, I think, is absolutely massive. And I don't compliment the RFU unless they really, 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 really deserve it. And they really, really deserve it. I think that they have been absolutely outstanding at getting the women's game going. When I definitely didn't think it would happen from October, the number of fixtures that have gone ahead, there have been a handful cancelled, obviously, because of COVID. Ironically, one was cancelled because of a frozen pitch the other day, which I thought was quite funny. The Sharks clash, DMP and Sale. But typical Northern rugby. But anyway, I think that it's been brilliant. I think the law changes have just been confirmed as well. So they're going to stay in 35 minutes. And that's probably not ideal prep because there's hardly any scrums. Although the forwards probably are loving it. Not ideal to not go into a World Cup having done lots of scrummaging.
No.
But they, yeah, I think it's class to see the girls playing. And
so what did you, this article this week that Rugby Pass have put out about the lack of testing in the women's game and how it's not fair comparative to the men's?
Did it come out on Rugby Pass? I didn't see it. Is it Telegraph?
Oh, was it Telegraph? Oh, no, sorry. The Rugby Pass article was about sexism in the women's game. My apologies. Yeah. So yeah, it was a Telegraph. Yeah, yeah, it was Fiona, wasn't it? The Telegraph who put the article out.
Yeah, it was on the on the back of Christine Summer, who's an American international that plays at Quinns, had tweeted saying that she was concerned about the safety of female players playing in the Allianz Premier 15s because there's no testing. And I think I don't agree. And as a player, I think that, all right, she has an opinion, you know, about the player safety and her own well-being. From my perspective, everything has been done by the RFU and the clubs to make it as safe as possible for those fixtures to play. Now, she comments about the fact that it's not elite or professional. So elite and professional sport in England can carry on. And she says it's not elite and it's not professional, it's amateur. And that made me really angry because we have fought for so long for it to be called elite, because it is the top class club rugby. It's not international level, but it's the top class club rugby, and therefore is, in my opinion, elite. Those girls train full time. They might have to work as well, through my career, I did that, and I would never say that I was an amateur over. I was always an elite. I was an elite amateur player, you know, because I just didn't get paid. The paid bit is where you get the professional tag. And I think, you know, from her point of view and her concern, you know, if that's her decision, it, for me, that her decision should be, therefore, she doesn't play and or gets, you know, and isn't involved until she feels safe. That's absolutely fine on a personal level. But for me as a player, I think we can only compliment the RFU and say, well done for putting everything in place. I know that they would not be prepared to allow that league to go ahead if they ever thought that a player was going to be at high risk or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And I know that you mentioned to me the other day when we were talking about this, the bigger picture of it is have a conversation with a bloke who plays for a championship rugby team about how much rugby that they've seen this year, which is an RFU funded competition. And this is where, you know, the RFU really can be complimented because they've put their money where their mouth is and they've chosen to support the women's game, perhaps at the detriment of lower levels of the men's game. We can't have it all. You know, we are all acutely aware of how much money this is costing the Premiership sides. The Premiership sides who now have less money because of the TV deal, because of the nature of what's going on. And it is costing millions to test these people. Millions.
And also, you know, The risk, I suppose, the reason with the testing is there for the men's is because they have the money to pay for the testing, fundamentally. They are also multi-million pound businesses that are part of multi-million pound TV deals to get the games going. And also they train full time together all day, every day. Now, internationals, before they go into camp, before England went into camp, they were all tested because they are in a different type of bubble that and different training environment where they will do longer periods of time with contact, longer and different types of training than allowed with Premier 15. So there are really strict rules around the Premier 15. They have to record every session that so that if anyone does test positive, then basically they can see exactly who they've been sat with, exactly who they've, everything has to be recorded. I think it's only a 15-minute window where they're allowed to be elements of contact. So there's lots of things that have been put in place.
They also spent a vast amount of time over that autumn away from their families. And an example of that was really heartwarming. Mallory Launchbury put a video on her Instagram of Blythe being reunited with Joe, which made you realize, you know, this, they're being tested and it's costing loads, but it's also like the personal cost of, you know, they're away from their families. Now the reality with the women's game is, you know, it is elite, as you say, but it isn't necessarily professional because people are having to pay their bills and other jobs. You can't afford for people to be in camps where they're completely isolated and excluded because they have to go to work. So it is a case of the RFU are doing as much as they can. And it does mean that we're seeing women's rugby when it would be quite easy for them to say, no, we can't sanction this because we can't.
Yeah, we can't. And then what would everyone say? Oh, women's rugby's not playing. And, you know, there was a massive fuss about under 18 football in academies being allowed with the boys and not with the girls. Everyone was like, but the boys can, but the girls can't. It came down to cost. It came down to the cost of not just testing, but running a COVID safe protocol. And the women's doesn't have it. So, okay, right. We take, you know, when I was involved, so this is the first round of funding from the Premier 15s, it was £75,000 per club. Now, there was an additional amount of money that was given per sponsorship. Like, what are you saying? Like, a £50,000 goes towards testing. What happens to the rest of the support that the programmes are supposed to be offering? And it's like this this constant, you know, Robin Peter to pay Paul situation. Yeah. And, you know, okay, so the money needs to be there, but it's not. So what do we do? Do you take the funding and test everybody? And then actually we say, but actually, because we've taken the money from this area of professional coaching, medical cover, nutritional support, analysis, facilities, kit, because we've taken the money from that pot of money and we've put it into testing, well, then the argument is, well, we don't have any of that. So, you know, I think
how can far do that put back the women's game in, say, 2 years when you look further down the line and you say, well, we had to stop that then. So it's going to have a long term impact. So interesting. It's an interesting debate.
And I think fundamentally, as a player, you've got a choice and you make the choice to either be involved or not. And, you know, because we're not bound, well, some of the girls are bound by contract, certain level of contract in terms of turning up or being paid or whatever, you're going to have to make a choice. Yeah. But, you know, if there are players that feel that they're not safe, then don't be involved, you know, that, and that's okay as well. I think that needs to be supported as much as the fact that I agree that this is going ahead and I feel like all of the things in place are protecting the players as much as possible.
Yeah. Moving on, big news in my world this week is that John Mulvihill has been, I won't say sacked from the Blues because we don't really know what's gone on there, but John Mulvihill has left Cardiff Blues as head coach, and it could mean that my former boss at the Blues, Di Young, is on his way back to the Arms Park. Good times are here again.
Was he there? I'm sure I've heard you tell a story about him being there when you worked there as a nipper. Yeah, nipper.
When I worked at the Blues from the age of 17 to about 22. And he...
Living the dream?
Living the dream. I was living the dream, like some of the best times of my life.
Have I ever told you about living the dream, the tattoo situation?
No.
So we had like Live the Dream as part of our strap line with England years ago. And with the old rose that looked like a tulip, but it was supposed to be a rosebud. Anyway, and it was on our Gilbert kit. Yeah. And Kat Merchant had a tattoo that she got that rose tattooed onto her shoulder, and had live the dream, the tattoo artist got it wrong and it said live the dream.
Oh my God, stop.
She's now got it covered with a proper big rose and like she's got a big old tattoo on the back that's really cool. But live the dream was something that we found funny for a long, long, long time.
That is a nightmare. My friend, who is a deputy head teacher in a secondary school, has got no regrets tattooed in huge letters across the bottom of his back, which ironically, he really regrets. Just can't make it up. I don't know how many tattoos Dai Young has got, though he could get the eyebrow tats, because he doesn't have any eyebrows. And if you're thinking, what, go and have a look next time you look at Dai Young, next time you see a photo of him, next time you see him on a touchline, he doesn't have any
eyebrows. I really want to Google him now.
Yeah, because I don't know whether he had eyebrows as a young man, but he obviously used to tape his head when he played. So my assumption is that he just waxed them off accidentally. And I always wonder what he does in terms of like when he sweats, because that's the purpose your eyebrows serve, is to obviously...
No, to the girls. Actually, you know what? That's very, very true, because Heather Fisher, friend of the pod, friend of ours, she obviously having alopecia, has meant that she's lost her eyebrows, but also has meant she's lost her eyelashes and actually really struggles with sweat and like eyes potentially getting infected and all sorts of having problems, because they do actually have a reason for being on our face. Like it's not just for sculpting, it's for there for...
Well, NJJ has this issue because he is like mortally afraid of looking like an old man. So he trims his eyebrows, and every now and again, he uses a little knit comb and nail scissors, or sometimes uses his hair clippers and a knit comb, and he trims his eyebrows so that they never look bushy like an old man. And sometimes he does it too short and he comes in from a bike ride and his eyes are like bloodshot red, where he's a sweaty man and he's just had like streams of sweat into his eyeballs. So
I actually read something the other day which I thought was really, really funny, that back in, I don't know, it's basically talking about like how eyebrows have changed over the, like, so you know, if you were a 90s early 2000s teenager as a girl, you're like RIP to eyebrows, like there's photographs of me, awful. Now they're like ridiculous slugs and that's fashionable, but apparently back in the 1800s or something, they used to pluck or shave or whatever they used to do to their eyebrows to make their forehead bigger.
Wow.
So then I was like, actually, yeah, because can you remember they used to like put white out their face?
Yeah.
But then if you think about the pictures of the queens, they've got really big high hairlines, haven't they? I mean, you've got a low hairline, so therefore you would need hair. To maybe shave back off your eyebrows and just have them just above your eyelids.
Like literally like in the crease of my eyelid. I'm glad that people can't see what I'm doing. So yeah, that's the big news. I know that you are now like an uber pro 14 enthusiast because you have to watch the games a bit more because of Champions Cup, and you watch the Inter Pros over Christmas, which it makes me a bit sad. This is your first real kind of like deep dive into them because there are no fans there. And normally it is the most tribal that you see the pro 14 all season, and you know, Toman Park at its best over Christmas and
was 2003 in March, Ireland v England, my first cap, five people in the stands.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Two of them, mum and stepdad.
Yesterday Ed Jackson put a clip on Twitter of when from when he played for London Welsh, and he put rugby was too easy, so now I do disabled mountain climbing instead. And I replied saying the Kasem Stadium was so ahead of its time, hashtag empty stands, because there just was not a soul there watching London Welsh versus London Irish.
What a thriller. Just before we wrap up, I think the Leinster Connacht.
It comes from the back of the throat. Connacht.
I'm trying.
You are trying. I'm proud of you.
Leinster played at home against a team that were from Ireland. that were wearing green. And
have you ever been there? Have you ever been to Connacht, to the their stadium in Galway?
I think so. Whenever I watch that stadium, I don't watch the stadium, and then the rugby's happy. Yeah. I watch the rugby, and I feel like I've played as internationals there, but
you've
I don't know.
Track that, no, you would have played at Athlone.
I don't know, but we had a massive Kaylee after one of the internationals, and actually, to be fair, when we were over there, we'd all got benched. There was a group of like senior players that got benched for the game. I'd been playing not very well. I'd been playing with a knee injury, and other people wouldn't think Spence had been benched. It was all a bit orcs. Anyway, so we decided in the warm-up, in the middle of the game, we went down to the corner of the field, and each of us had to come up with the most old school stretch that we could, and we didn't realize that the cameras were on us, and so we were doing like arm circles and like touching our toes side to side. It was honestly one of the funniest things. What was I saying? Leinster game, losing at home, wow. They had a hell of a lot thrown at them, probably not quite as much as when Northampton traveled over for the Champions Cup, and there was changes before half time, before the kickoff. I hadn't even got until Miles was reading out the list, and I was like, oh god, he's my not team. On the team sheet. And then there was like HIA followed by injury. It was just awful. Johnny Sexton got injured in this game, but I know that it like has got quite a significant effect on the Pro 14 and the different, is it pools? No, what? No,
so there's two conferences.
Conferences, that's the bad boy.
Conference A.
But it means that Ulster are the only one that is unbeaten. And and I'm going over to Ulster for their game next week in Champions Cup. So hopefully this game goes ahead this weekend, and then which they play Leinster, which is massive. And then, next week I'm on the plane.
Have I ever told you about, so obviously the hashtag for Ulster fans on Twitter is hashtag SUFTUM, stand up for the Ulstermen. And when it must have been 2012 when they had their Heineken Cup run to the final. And after one of the games, I put something on Facebook with hashtag SUFTUM. And my sister, who is dyslexic, for anyone who doesn't know, text me and she said, what does that stand for? I was like, well, what do you think it stands for, Sophie? She said, shut up effing TWAT you melon. I was like, no, it definitely, she was like, oh, I was very confused. I was like, I can't think of anything more random for you to think that stands for. So yeah, that just always makes me laugh. I moving away from rugby and to tie this pod up, last night was a really seminal moment in our friendship. Something that probably not a lot of people are aware of is that whilst, we are soul sisters in so many ways, and the biggest hurdles we have is that I am a massive telly addict, and up until the pandemic, you were not. And last night, when everything was kicking off at the Capitol building in Washington DC, I was able to text you and say, Nolly, put CNN on, it's like something out of Designated Survivor. And never before have I been able to send you a text with a TV reference that I thought you would understand. I was like, the day has come.
Well, the most ironic thing was that I didn't see it for 3 hours. Yeah. Because I hadn't looked at my social media, I hadn't looked at my phone, and was watching Border, which is the new series that I've been
Netflix.
Sorry about that. Anyway, shall we wrap up and have a Netflix chat next time?
Yeah, I like it. Send us your Netflix recommendations, because I've now watched Bridgerton all the way through twice, so I need something new. Though I'm not ruling out watching it a third time.
And make sure you tell us any of your pause for positivity.
Pause for positivity and your try hard tips. Bye, guys.
See you, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.